Okay, welcome to this Wednesday, October 22nd meeting of the Water Reclamation Facility Citizens Advisory Committee. First order of business is to establish a quorum and do a roll call.
Committee member Spagnola.
Here.
See, Mr. Woodson's here.
Here.
Dale Ferrer's here. John Diodati. Ginny Gerlich is here. Paul Donnelly. Valerie's here. Commissioner Stowski's here. And board member Shively is here. So we have everybody is here. President accounted for.
Thank you. We have a quorum. So if we could please have a moment of silence. Thank you. And if we could rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, before public comment, do we have any announcements or presentations?
No, but I was just wondering if the committee would entertain a change to the agenda. And we have some limited time with Mr. Nunley here to give the overview of the hydrogeological reports. I'm wondering if we could change the tour to the end of the meeting instead of the beginning of the meeting. In fact, that might work a little bit better to take care of business first and then go out there for the tour. Does that work for you, Mr. McElhane?
That's fine with me. Do we need a motion in a second?
Do we see consensus that everybody is nodding their heads? Okay, I think we're good.
Okay, great. Then we will make that adjustment. This brings us to public comment. If there's anyone from the community up.
I have an announcement as well.
Go ahead, please.
A couple things happened. The Finance Committee had met last time with the consultant from Kessler, Monica Reed, and one of the primary things that I got out of that meeting was the fact that she didn't have an idea that we had a nitrate issue, a nitrate problem in our drinking water, and if that is documented, our grants go right up to the front. So that is something I think that, you know, really was a lapse of judgment in not putting that we have a serious nitrate problem, especially in the Morro Basin. And then the other thing was there was several citizens came to me and said that they watched this meeting and it was truncated before it was supposed to. It was videotaped and it was truncated before it was adjourned last time. And the conversation had to do with INI in our city. And I just wanted to make sure that maybe if there could be an adjustment, make sure that we get the full meeting with when we have it videotaped.
Okay. Thank you, Richard. I think we can dive into your first issue when we get to B1, which is a update on the subcommittees from the subcommittees. And then as far as AGP, were you aware of that problem, Rob?
I think somebody told me that I was cut off in mid-sentence and then it just ended.
Okay. Hopefully.
So we'll make sure that AGP knows about that.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Anyone else? Comments? All right. Now's the time for public comment. If anyone from community would like to come up and speak to anything before this committee. Seeing none, we will modify the agenda and move to consent calendar, and we need to approve the minutes. Are there any comments on the minutes? Second, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Thank you. That passes. Move on to B1. Where we now have the opportunity for the subcommittees to discuss anything that they may have discussed as a subcommittee. So we'll start with finance, if that's okay.
Okay.
Okay, I wasn't prepared to do this, so I'm just going to be reading through some of my notes. I took some notes of a very, very enlightening meeting with Monica Kestrel. Sure. Is this better?
Yes.
Okay. So she said that grantors are looking for projects that are innovative, tightly defined, and demonstrate that due diligence has been done. In other words, background studies and financial and planning documents such as economic and development and vitality strategies, that they've all been completed and all the requirements of the grant application have been met. She said if Morro Bay had an innovative project such as one that would reduce reliance on state water project, it would be ranked higher than other projects. And she mentioned Oxnard, for example. They obtained grants for their advanced water purification facility because it was able to show the project reduced reliance on the state water project. She called that indirect potable component. Okay, I asked her about her current clients and whether they had in-house grant experts, and she responded that typically the clients she works with don't have staff that work on grants. Instead, they employ consultants to write the grant proposals.
Can I interrupt her? I didn't understand what you just said. You said that they were not experienced in grant proposals, the consultant?
No. Her current clients basically are municipalities and they're government entities. And she said that they don't, because I was curious about Morro Bay, whether we have the in-house capacity. And she said, no, typically they hire consultants. So, and then she gave me an example. She said in Oxnard's case, they developed a system. The staff created two lists of capital improvement projects. One was a list of the necessary projects, and the other was a wish list. And on a monthly basis, she evaluates new grant opportunities against these lists. And then she advises Oxnard when she sees a match. In other words, the grants that match the needs of the city and the scope of the grant. And then she performs additional work if she's authorized by the city. So really, the extent to which the city itself is involved includes writing draft resolutions for the city council, recommending authorization to pursue a specific grant, and providing financial documents to support the grant application. So that was pretty much my takeaway was what and I'm just going to reiterate what she said. It's very tough to get grants, and actually they're a lot tougher than I thought. But she did say when I asked her about USDA, because I brought up this point last time, that Los Osos was able to get a USDA grant. And she doesn't have experience with USDA, at least not that particular grant. Do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, I think she said she worked for USDA.
She was in the Forest Service, but she hasn't had direct experience with the grant that Los Osos got.
Right, right. I was there. What I got out of it, the main thing that we have an opportunity for is that because we have a nitrate problem, and if we tie it together with this WRF and the infrastructure associated with that, it opens up an avenue for drinking water grants and the water reclamation grants. Ms. Reed is, I was very impressed. I think that she is a, I think that if the city decides to use her, I think we would be, it would be great for this, for us as a community. She was very knowledgeable and had a good record with success. But, I think that, you know, she did mention that you know, if you wanted to rise to the top, you have to be solving a problem. And we here in Morro Bay...
The suppliers you're dealing with. And she also said, because we were focused a lot on grants, obviously being in the finance, that we need to focus, be sure that the grants are not driving the project. They may color your approach to assistance in obtaining funding or financing loans, et cetera, but the project needs to be conceived, you know, first.
Great. Excellent. Well, I think both, that's good information. Both reports that we have in our packet today discuss nitrates in the Chorro and Morro Valleys, and even, I believe, MTBE in the Morro Valley. And I know that the water bond in November puts a lot of money towards cleanup of damaged aquifers. So this could be a good opportunity. I'm glad you guys were able to tease that out. And as far as innovation is concerned, it might be a subtask for the financed committee to start maybe defining some of the ways that this project is innovative and can help us be competitive when the time comes for applying for grants. Does environmental or engineering water resources have any updates to this point they'd like to report?
No.
Okay. Environmental? No. Great. I'd open it up to public comment. If anyone out there in our capacity crowd wants to say something, doesn't look like it. So this is just a receive update. No action needed. Move on to C1, which is a review of the reports regarding the initial findings on hydrological evaluation of the potential benefits to the city water supply for increasing wastewater discharge to either Morro or Chorro Creek.
And we're going to have Mike Nunley summarize the findings that Cleith Harris came up with. And we've both been on the phone with Cleith Harris as late as half an hour ago to talk with them about, you know, potential questions that may come up at this meeting.
Thank you, Rob. I'm Mike Nunley. I'm the project engineer that's been working with John Rickenbach on the project management work. And I'd like to give you a brief overview. I'm not a hydrogeologist. I'm a civil engineer. So I'm going to kind of give you the highlights, the assumptions, and some of the background information from the reports. Spencer's planning to present to council Tuesday night, and he'll be here and available for questions. And, you know, I'll try to answer what I can. I'm sure Rob and John will. But you have two reports from Cleith Harris geologists. The first one is dated October the 6th. And it's titled The Hydrologic Evaluation of Potential Benefits to the City Water Supply from Increasing Wastewater Discharge to Chorro Creek. The second report, dated October 20th, is the subject's Hydrologic Evaluation of Potential Benefits to City Water Supply from Reclaimed Water Use in the Morro Valley. And the difference between the two reports, one of the fundamental differences right out of the gate, is we're looking at the reclaimed water use in the Morro Valley. The October 20th report really deals with the Rancho Colina siting. The Chorro Valley report really deals with the CMC siting. So the first one I'm going to walk through is the CMC, or the Chorro Valley report. So some key points, I think, on the background of this. A lot of you may already know this, but I'll walk through some background about the city's water supply relative to Chorro Creek. CMC discharges highly treated effluent, to Chorro Creek upstream of the city wells. And the city has two well fields along the creek and five wells total. And those wells have a production capacity of 1,600 acre-feet per year in terms of well size and piping and all that sort of thing. Now, in terms of their water rights, they can only produce 1,142.5 acre-feet per year. That's the maximum they can produce due to their water rights allocation. It's a permitted allocation. And they can't draw water when Chorro Creek is less than 1.4, when there's a flow in Chorro Creek less than 1.4 CFS downstream of the wells. So they're limited on when they can draw, they're limited on how much they can draw, even though they can clearly draw more based on well and pump sizes. Nitrates and salinity are issues that are discussed in the report with this water supply. And another thing I wanted to note is the city's been taking flow measurements at two locations along the creek. You'll see discussion of that in a map since 2010 in order to work on some of the water rights issues and get a better handle on flows in the creek relative to water supply. So the city has a lot of good information along the creek in terms of flow. The permitting, so the issues related to increasing the discharge to Troy Creek at CMC was not addressed. So this doesn't address any of the water quality issues that, for example, Larry Walker talked about, because that's kind of a whole different side of the permitting building from the water supply. And it also assumes that Cayuga Sanitary District is a partner in this facility and that the city would be able to pump to full capacity with their existing wells. So this assumes that if all the water went into the creek, the city would be able to extract out the full 1,678 acre-feet per year that that their wells will produce, as long as the water's in the creek and meets the other criteria. Also, that groundwater production would reduce stream flow by an equivalent amount. So in other words, if it comes out at the well, stream flow is reduced, and that's to make sure that we don't cause stream flow to drop below that 1.4 CFS. So that's another piece of this. And that agricultural demand between CMC and the well field could be around 100 acre-foot per year if agricultural development takes place along the creek. So that was another assumption that they added in. And so they ran, they took their flow records and they added in the flows from the combined CMC regional facility, assuming Moore Bay and Cayuga Sanitary District are both contributing flow. And they increased the flow over those data records by that amount. So it turns out to be an average of 1.5 million gallons a day over an average year that they added to that flow record to determine what that would do relative to all of these different conditions where they can draw or not draw water. And what they concluded was that their findings concluded that during a wet year that they could pull out about an additional 500 acre-feet per year, somewhere in that neighborhood, and during a dry year it could be as high as 1,000 acre-feet per year. And that is about somewhere between 36 and 60% of that discharge, that increased discharge at CMC would be available to the city water supply based on these assumptions. So that's kind of a simple overview. And the CMC discharge would wind up at about 1,680 acre-feet per year. Coincidentally, the same as what the city can draw out in their well fields, just coincidence only. But that would be, so they'd be discharging an additional 1,680 acre-feet per year at the design flow of the plant, and that 30 to 60% of that would be available for city water supply. So I'm sure you'll have a lot of questions, and you know, a lot of the hydrogeology questions, I suggest you wait for Spencer so he could, you know, answer a lot of the specifics. But what I'd like to do, I could either respond if you've got questions now that you'd like to discuss, or I'd be glad to answer them, or we could move over to the Moro Valley analysis.
To not complicate things, we should maybe ask some questions right now. And then are we going to get an opportunity? I think I just heard that ask Spencer questions. How would we do, he's presenting the city council, but not us. How do we ask Spencer questions?
So a couple different ways. We can carry forward these questions he might have if we're not able to answer those here and make sure that he addresses those to the city council. That's really how we did the Larry Walker report and the Monica Reed report also, is carried those questions forward and they were addressed in their presentations at the city council meeting. And the city council meeting is, of course, a public meeting. So this committee could come to that meeting and ask, after the presentation, ask additional questions of the report.
Okay. So.
Also, I just called him.
Go ahead.
I went ahead and called him and asked, you know, there was some stuff in the Moral Valley that was wrong as far as the data concerned. So I just called him.
I can't hear you.
He's really nice. Just call him. That's exactly what I did, so.
Okay.
Is this a point to ask questions on the Choro Valley?
Yeah, and I'll start on this end and work my way down, so you can go ahead.
Oh, well, I got a handout with regards to this Choro Valley that I want to give to the commission right now, and I kind of reviewed the report, so if I can do that, and then, you know, we can go look at.
Okay. Mike, and I'm not sure it's you, it's probably more Rob, this will be addressed to. I heard water rights thrown out there versus permitting, and I hear we have X number of acre feet a year we could pull when the flow's over 1.4. Is it actually a water right that's entitled to?
Zone, I guess it is. Yeah, one of the things I noticed right off the bat is this attachment one, is that attachment to something else? Is there another report that this supports?
No.
It's attachment one. That's
it's attachment to the staff report.
Okay, gotcha. The other question I have is that you talked about that possibility of what we can produce at the well field. Can we take that in the tanks? Can the tanks take that much water, 1,600 acre feet a year? And which tanks does the Choro Valley go to?
All of our water goes to the King's tanks, where it's blended and then distributed out to the system. So we would have to reduce our state water allocation to take all that water. The other thing that we would have to do is, in the short term, is provide some sort of mandrake removal for those well fields, because those wells are too high in nitrates to remove by blending. Especially if we're going to maximize the use of those wells.
Okay. Barbara, yeah.
Yes, I have a question on the Choro Valley report, specifically on page 8 on the summary, because I think you converted those monthly yields to annual. Unless this is reversed or a typo, it says the 85 acre feet increased groundwater yield to the city during drought and 45 during non-drought periods. That seems reversed, certainly from the conclusion in the Moro Valley report. In other words, during a drought, there's going to be more?
Yeah, it's a counterintuitive finding, really. But what happens is, since you have less water in the creek during dry years. See, during wet years, a lot of the water that goes into the creek during wet periods of the year goes out to the ocean and isn't available.
It seemed to be the reverse of the conclusion in the other report. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, so on page 1, the last sentence, the report states that the existing CMC plant, if chosen to be operated as a regional facility, would need to be replaced. And the report, I'm suggesting that the report explain the rationale for determining why the existing CMC facility can't be retrofitted to accommodate the increased flows that are associated with a regional facility. I understand that the CMC facility is fairly new, having been completed in 2006, and upgraded in 2010. Could you speak to that?
Yes, and what we can do is, you know, he's not looking at it from a treatment plant perspective. What we could do is we could just change the language and say that the option could be the plant would be retrofitted.
Okay, because that would have a bearing on the cost.
Right.
And then on page 2, water rights, I think Rob has already answered this question. But the report stated that if the city increases wastewater discharges to Choro Creek, it's assumed that the city well field allocation of creek underflow may also be increased. And I'm just suggesting that the report clarify whether or not the city has rights to the water after it's discharged to the creek.
So we would have to petition for those rights to the state board to make beneficial use of those.
Mm-hmm. So I would suggest the report clarify that, because that question's come up a couple of times.
Actually, he recommends that at the end of the report that the city petition for it.
Oh, okay.
And he's, Spence, Cleith Harris was very good at, I think, at stating what the assumptions and limitations were, and that had to be one of their assumptions.
Right.
And it's not an uncommon practice with wastewater or recycled water discharge and extraction to get a one-day benefit.
Well, no, the question I had is I've looked at some of the city council, I've reviewed some of the city council meetings, and a question keeps coming up, who has rights to that water once it's discharged? That's the only point I'm trying to make.
Yep, understood.
And then on page 4, the benefits analysis, the report identifies 60 additional acres of land that could be farmed, which could result in up to 120 acre-feet per year of additional groundwater demand. And this increase in agriculture demand was the only one, the only use described for the reclaimed water besides the augmenting stream flow. And I believe there are other potential users for high-quality tertiary treated effluent in the area that the report may take into account. So, for example, Dairy Creek Golf Course, Cal Poly, Cuesta College, County Jail, County Juvenile Services, County Education, County Engineering, Maintenance and Support Services, and Camp San Luis Obispo.
Issues will have to be addressed in John and Mike's report because they're beyond the scope of Cleith Harris' report, like the cost. They would do that analysis rather than having a hydrogeologist look at that.
And we've been discussing ways to evaluate either cost of delivered water or value of delivered water. So that's something we're discussing on how to address, because the factors there would be treatment plant upgrades at CMC. It would be the cost of conveyance to CMC.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be power cost, chemical cost, and then also cost for treating the groundwater for nitrate removal at the city's wells. So there are a number of things that will factor in to those cost opinions.
Yep.
Let me give you a handout here. I think there are several issues with this report and I take issue with a lot of these assumptions. And let me just read like the general, and then we can address each page or the pages accordingly. The document presents the theory that increasing surface stream flow will allow the city to withdraw more water from the Chorro Basin aquifer. Unfortunately, the document does not address increasing the amount of water under the ground in the aquifer that the wells take the water from. So we have the situation where withdrawals are going to exceed deposits. Artificially increasing the amount of water on the surface does not mean that there's plenty of water underground. The result of increasing withdrawals based solely on artificially enhanced surface flow could be seawater intrusion, environmental damage, and complaints from other aquifer users. Now, it seems like the regulatory agencies, which include the State Water Board, but also include the CCC, and then, as you know, the Department of Fish and Game, and the Morro Bay National Estuary Program that have to be addressed, and then the Coastal San Luis Resource Water District will require substantial proof that taking more water out of the depleted aquifer will not cause problems. And this to consult, the report doesn't really show that. And, you know, if we go to, like, page 1, and I'll just kind of hit the highlight here. In the report, it starts off with the Cleith Harris geologist has completed an evaluation. Well, in there it says increasing the flow in the Chorro Creek using wastewater discharges would allow the city to operate their well fields more frequently and more available water during drought periods, in addition to providing water for environmental demand. Then it says that the benefit analysis focuses on water rights and hydrology and other things. Okay, so now when you contrast that with your study in the Morro Valley, I did a search there in your Chorro analysis using the terms aquifer and recharge and got no hitch in the Choro analysis, but in the Morrow analysis, you're addressing that issue. So there's, you know, there's, and then getting enough water out of the stream meant that you have to have 1.4 CFM from decision 1633, but that doesn't really address the health of the aquifer under the ground. So that's, I kind of have an issue with that. And then on page 2, I'm going to address, you know, just summarize some of the things. On page 2, in the paragraph where you have both Choro Valley well fields operate under the State Water Control Board, and it says, amongst other things, if the city increases wastewater discharges into Choro Creek, however, it assumes that the city well field allocation to the creek overflow may be increased. That's a big assumption. Because not, you know, decision 1633 not only addresses the 1.4, but also it's maintaining optimal surface stream flow, but also minimizing the risk of seawater intrusion into the aquifer and protecting the rights of other users that are upstream. And during times when the creek would originally be dry, taking more water to the aquifer without adequate recharge would potentially cause and exacerbate the situation with the seawater intrusion. So, it kind of goes on, and increasing in the wastewater discharge into Choro Creek would reduce the potential of impact of seawater intrusion in the narrows. That statement seems to ignore the fact that during dry periods, we would be taking water out of the aquifer at a time when there would be much less recharge in the normal years. So, in the Cleath study, the Ashurst Wellfields Cleath study, Cleath had found that the recharge from the stream recharge to the Ashurst Wellfield during normal years than Choro Creek. So, as far as increasing the flow, even their own report says it's marginal. So those assumptions that we're going to be able to pump all our wells there, that's a big one. And then on page 4, it talks about the land use. It starts off with the land use survey and impacting the Choro Valley groundwater, and addressing that issue. This focuses only on how agriculture deposits into the surface stream. It doesn't talk about how it recharges into the aquifer, like, where they talked about that in Morrow. And then on page 6, it talks again about the increased water supply. The material along the charts of the preceding pages focuses only on surface water. Again, it's only talking about surface water and supposedly being able to increase the well production. And then the other on page 8, same thing. It's, it's addressing, again, surface water. It's the big assumption here is due to the issue of deposits versus withdrawals. Okay? And then on page 9, the study provides an overview of the constraints of the city wells in the Choro Valley and the benefits with that 1.5 MGD. Now, this conclusion seems a little bit premature because it's based simply on increasing surface flow again, okay? And that doesn't mean it's a slam dunk. Now, one of the things, the major thing here too, is that it ignores the fact that the Coastal Commission, they're going to require a coastal development permit to use those wells. Now, previously in the city, they try to redrill a well there, the city tried to write themselves a permit, and then eventually the Coastal Commission came in and said, you need a coastal development permit. And the key issue is that change in intensity of water use. Well, right now we can't use it. Okay, so there's going to be a change. So those are the kind of, being able to review this we had a meeting with the Planning Commission yesterday. So this report, the color of it is showing, I think it's coloring the Choro a little bit too rosy, you know what I mean? And we need to, I want to conclude it with one thing here. We have, state water is going down. Morro Basin is our primary where we get our water. Now, if you're a citizen, as we're here in a Morro Bay citizen, if we take Morro Bay, the Morro Basin water, we treat it, because it's nitrated, we treat it in a desal. We pay premium for that, okay? We disperse it to the city. And we wait, you know, goes to the wastewater, and then we pump it 12 miles out of the city. That's a commodity that we pump out of the city. And now we're going to go to a labyrinth of legality as far as water rights. And that, just that thought seems a little bit like, as far as Morro Bay is concerned, we take, we have no control and are taking all the risk. In addition, when I went to the Cayuga Sanitary District presentation a while back, they're talking about putting a outfall pipe from CMC to dump brine, the county, the whole county deposits brine right into our outfall here. That's an environmental risk that we're going to be taking. So I want to make sure that, you know, the public, it's more for the public that understand that, you know, wastewater isn't waste, it's a commodity. Thank you. But you can keep that copy.
Thank you. I appreciate
I'd like to have this put into the record.
Yeah, thanks, Richard. Valerie, any comments on this Shore report?
Can I make a suggestion at this point?
Yeah.
There's a lot of good stuff in here. It would be useful if that could be emailed to us digitally, because we could then send it on to Spencer Harris. And a lot of your points are well taken on having his comment on the assumptions relative to a lot of the interactive issues, the legal issues, the water rights issues, what the city can and can't actually do. That will be, I don't know how much Mike is prepared to address some of that now, but those are bigger issues that have to come together, and we're going to bring those together in the final report that we do put together. But if you can make this available so we can get some preliminary feedback from Spencer, that would be good.
I'll work on getting it in electronic format and then send it to you. One of the things that, you know, as an it's kind of like we're an advisory council, and then my understanding is the city
information available so that it can be responded to.
And one of the things I'd like to point out, too, is Cleith Harris studies really are considered maximum benefit type studies. So you mentioned a lot of things that are I think are very important to consider. And in their report, they basically had to make some assumptions up front to say, best case, what's the most water benefit we could get from these two sites? So that's where that comes from. It's not that they didn't recognize that those things were there. It's that they needed to make some simplifying assumptions just to start the analysis. If that makes sense.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, to really focus on the big picture here, there are a lot of issues that obviously they had to make assumptions on. But at the end of the day, the purpose of the two reports is to be able to see, relatively speaking, what a benefit might be. If all the assumptions are off equally, then maybe you can see that for what it is. But that's the point, is to allow the council to understand, is there a relative better benefit one way or another? But we want to make sure we get the assumptions as accurate as we can.
I think one thing we need to add to it is, at least pulling out our crystal balls, and what the likelihood of, you know, this maximum benefit is too. I mean, is it a, you know, a 1% chance, or is it a 99% chance of us getting all the water right to that discharge?
Okay, thank you. Valerie, did you said you didn't have any comments, but Bill? Or do you, Valerie?
I guess this, when they make the presentation, that they outline the process as to, in regards to surface water, does it or does not enhance our groundwater basin,
and the actual process on how it makes well water more available. Just kind of walk us through that.
Bill?
Thanks, Mike, for your presentation. Am I understanding that this is
going to go directly to the city council in this, at this stage with this format and with this verbiage without addressing our issues? And are we going to be asked to approve this in some form?
Well, right now we're just providing comments to staff. It's my understanding that you'll be providing feedback to CLEAT as well as we're invited to, but there's also going to be a final report from John Rickenbach and Associates.
But is there going to be an impression given to the city council that this was blessed by us?
No, not at all. I mean, we're going to pass along the concerns that this committee has with the report, and that some of them will need to be addressed at the meeting, and some issues that may be outside police scope will need to be addressed in John and Mike's final report.
Keep in mind that...
What action are you going to ask the city council to take based on these reports?
No action at the next meeting. It's just they're receiving it so that they can... what we didn't want to have happen is all these reports come in at November 12th and go through each one of them during that meeting. So it's to provide some air in distribution of these reports. So we get the report out there, present it to council. There may be questions that come up in between now and when council makes their final decision that will need to be addressed.
Well, then, if you're going to... You're going to present both reports?
Correct.
Well, one report addresses wastewater discharges, and the other one addresses reclaimed water. And there's a lot of CFSs in there, and there's a lot of acre feet in there, and there's a lot of monthly usages, and a lot of yearly usages. And I found the summaries in the back of both reports, and if I was a city council member, I would be looking for an executive summary at the front of each one of those reports. I would be looking for compatible water units, whether it's CFS or acre feet or monthly uses or yearly uses. And I guess the last comment that I want to make is that I agree with Mary's issue with trying to translate this into some kind of dollars. Reclaimed water or recharged water is a big difference to me. And I think I know you have to quantify this stuff first, Mike, and I know that's what you're doing. You got to quantify the water, and then you can start addressing or putting money values to it. But there's no way for me to evaluate the
CLEAT report does talk about that, because they have flow information at Cannett Road and also at
Charles Creek Road.
And so they made some assumptions on how much water loss, if you will, there is during dry years to come up with their conclusions.
But it has to be getting into the estuary for the steelhead and for all the migratory stuff and all the rest of it. So it has to be flowing into the estuary. Is that correct?
That's for there to be a benefit to the estuary. That's correct. There'd have to be flow there.
No, I mean for the legal requirements for our Chora wells.
No, the legal requirement is measured at Chora Creek Road.
Oh, at
Chora
Creek Road.
So it's upstream of the... if you go down Quintana Road all the way to the very end, there's Chora Creek Road. It's a private road, and there's a dry crossing there.
Yeah,
And that's where our permit requirement is that we measure it.
It's upstream then.
Yes, it's not a huge. It's not
maybe
a mile upstream from the estuary.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Did you want to add something, Valerie?
Well, just it seems to me that they were tasked to do two different studies. One is to look at the use of reclaimed water for agriculture in the Moro Valley.
Nice to get your microphone. The microphone actually turned on to you and away from his arm.
That they were actually tasked to do two different studies, and I think that it might have been on the staff report where it says discharge into Moro and Churro Creeks, where that's not necessarily what they were tasked to do. One is to look at the effects on the groundwater basin of reclaimed water for agriculture in the Moreau Valley versus looking at wastewater discharges to Moreau Creek and the constraints that would have on our city well fields. There were two different tasks, two different problems, two different things to address. So.
Okay. Go ahead, please.
Just real quick, and it's because I'm a little bit rusty. With Title 22 water, have they ever allowed potable uses of recycled or reclaimed water yet?
The regulations aren't direct potable.
Oh, okay.
So the regulations aren't quite there, but the governor has directed State Water Board to develop those regulations
because
now that the health department is within the state board.
Because whether you pull the water out of the wells in Choro or Morrow, you still run them through the RO units there at the Corp Yard?
No.
Oh, you do not?
No.
Oh, okay.
We don't have a feed line from our Choro wells that comes back into town that would go to the desal plant.
So it's only the saltwater ones right there on the Embarcadero have a direct?
No, the saltwater wells and then our Morrow Valley brackish water wells.
Oh, okay.
Over by Lila Kaiser Park, they have a direct
okay,
inlet.
Okay, so just the Lila Kaiser on the Morrow Creek side.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead.
Oh, that thing is loud. I just had one more comment in it because we were really originally talking about Choro Valley, but Richard brought up Morrow. It seems to me that they're really two different animals here. We're going to be discharging in the Choro Valley upstream of all the potential users. In the Morrow Valley, we will probably be discharging with all the users that need it upstream of that discharge. So there's a big difference between the two valleys and how that beneficial use might come about. At least that's the way I understand it.
Right. I think we're going to hear about Morrow Valley here in a second. But Morrow Valley is providing the water to the agriculture interests so they don't pump as much. And then what is the benefit to the Morrow Valley well fields from their reduced pumping from the use of the recycled water? I agree with Bill. I think at the end of the day, I was actually starting to do conversions as well and making a table. And, that leads to the conclusion that the city council is probably going to want a executive summary table at the end that shows what will their new well production potentially be and possibly what would the offset of state water be. And that's where you can get a dollar value.
Right.
Because weren't the Choro Valley well fields the historical, predominantly the wells that were used?
Yeah, they were part of the original water district at the south end of town that provided water before incorporation to the south end of town. And then the Del Mar water district was at the north end of town. So there was two separate water companies, but historically, the Choro Valley wells have been higher producers for the city until recent years, and because we cannot produce anything out of those wells when the creek flow is below 1.4 CFS, and we haven't seen creek flows even close to that in 6-8 months.
Right. Okay. And 85 acre feet a month is, I think you said, about 1,000 acre feet. That's pretty close to what the city uses on a yearly basis, right? I had it about 75%.
The concept of direct delivery to ag users and then look at what the impact of those folks drawing less water would do to the city water supply in the Moreau Valley. So to give some background, so there are 8 production wells in the Moreau Valley, and there are 2 additional city wells. The city has a permit for 581 acre feet per year to draw from that aquifer and a maximum pumping rate of 1.2 CFS. So they have an instantaneous pumping rate. The brackish water desalination plant, the city water treatment plant, treats that water primarily for nitrates. And there's a 1,340 agri-foot per year production capacity based on kind of the pumps and wells themselves. They could produce 1,340 agri-foot per year if the water was available and if the permit allowed it. So some assumptions that Cleith Harris needed to make, again, to make this a true maximum benefits type analysis. And As we all know, the surface water groundwater interaction is very complicated. I think you had some great comments on the last one regarding that. Similar issues anywhere you look. But this, again, was to get an idea on maximum benefits, starting point for that, to look at this. So some assumptions were, first off, that we could produce water quality that would be okay for the users in that valley. So in other words, whether it's salt removal, whether it's, you know, we know we need to meet full compliance with Title 22, that we can produce water that folks can use. That's the first assumption. Second assumption is that the CSD is not a partner on this one. Just because at this point, their stated preference or their findings in their report was really that the CMC was the best alternative. And that we would be at 1.1 million gallons per day, 1.13 million gallons per day average flow at this site versus the 1.5, 1.5 million gallons a day at CMC. And that equates to 1,265 acre-feet per year. I'm going to try to keep us on an AFY basis because that's easier for me. The crop survey that Cleith Harris performed, they had developed an estimate based on the county water master plan numbers of 1,460 acre-feet per year. And I know Mr. Guerra had talked to Spencer about that based on his experience. And felt like the numbers could be considerably higher, or his observation is that it is. So Spencer's taking a look at that. But the another assumption is that the recycled water users won't just continue pumping groundwater at the same rate. That has to be one of the assumptions, and not that they're giving up their water right or anything like that, but that there's some sort of exchange there. And that during wet weather, that you can only supply as much water as the plants can take, basically. So what that does is that takes that 1,460 acre-feet per year water demand, and when you take that and you extract out the difference in the monthly water demands versus how much water you're actually producing at the plant, you wind up with 1,100 acre-feet per year total of usable water for recycling that comes out of the plant. So the major summary is that I'm just going to hop right to the end. Based on the analysis they came up with and what we call this in-lieu recharge of the aquifer, the estimate was during drought years and then normal to wet years that 42% to 49% of produced water. So that means you're producing 1,260 acre-feet per year. You've really only got demand for 1,000 or 1,100 acre-feet per year. So that's already knocking you down in terms of your available percentage. But you wind up with 42% to 49% of your water produced at that location is available to the city wells with all these simplifying assumptions. That's best. In other words, that's based on the assumptions herein, that's the best case. Is a 42% to 49% on the 1,265. And then you compare that to the range of 30% to 60% on the 1,600 acre-feet per year at CMC. So the water benefit at CMC, 500 to 1,000 acre-feet per year. At Morrow, simplified assumption, 500 to 600 acre-feet per year. But that's assuming that Cayucos doesn't contribute.
For use or do you know?
Yeah, not at this point.
Okay.
But the assumption would be the city's always going to be producing water. And the so part of that master reclamation plan that the city is going to be developing, we'll look at things like where is water stored. What happens typically with larger recycled water systems like what we're talking about is you might have some day tank storage on the treatment plant site. You might pump to a large reservoir somewhere like Laguna Sanitation District does, or you might just have direct deliveries to the customers and have them manage their own reservoirs and their own flows. So there's a number of different ways to deal with that. That's a good question.
Will that decision be known prior to council making a decision?
as to how the recycled water would be stored?
Yes.
No.
Mike, I had a question. On the, you said an assumption is Cayucas is not part of it, and I know you can't really figure it out if they were, but conceptually, what would it do if they were involved?
So conceptually, what would happen is during the wet weather months, more water would not help because you don't have the demand for it. During dry weather months, you'd be able to meet more of that demand. If you look at the monthly water balance that Cleith Harris put together, let me find it for you. So if you look at Table 3, it's page 6 of the analysis. If you look at your what you call your wet weather months, like your January, your February, your water demand is only 66 and 67 acre-foot per year, for example. You're producing 130 and 114 acre-feet per year, or per month, I'm sorry, acre-feet per month. So, but when you get into the dry months, you get into June, July, August, you see that your water demand for that area is 170, 160 acre-feet per month. But you're only producing 100 to 115 acre-feet per month. So where the Cayucas contribution would help is raising the amount available during those dry months, the amount you could produce.
And right now the assumption is the water in those deficit months in the winter would go to ocean outfall, existing ocean outfall?
Or some other means of wet weather disposal.
Okay.
That's correct. Or storage, that's correct. And the storage would increase, basically the storage would make this. And now, if you had long-term, large, it's large reservoirs. It's not day tanks. But when you, if you have the storage available, you could conceivably use it all year if you have the storage.
And that would be might be something to consider that the farmers would want to know is if they're going to get any type of help or permitting to put in these large 49-acre-foot ponds. 50, you get into a whole bunch of weird stuff.
Gotcha. 49 is a magic number?
49 is a magic number, and
gotcha.
Cost control is also the magic number.
Yeah.
And that's where...
Didn't pop that time. Okay. The report speaks to Moore Valley as being an overdraft. Is that something that's going to come and haunt us as we try to get in the fray and have to mitigate that?
I think all of Cleith's assumption for the amount of water that is available is based on safe yield. So it's not pulling any water into those Morrow wells downstream of the Narrows. So we're not going to be sucking in seawater and increasing those chlorides in our wells. So all these numbers are based on safe yield to the basin and not inducing any ground, any saltwater intrusion.
And it's also not an identified high or medium priority basin.
Correct.
In DWR's bulletin that is under Pavley Dickinson, the new water bill. Any questions to my left?
Actually, this is not a question. It's more I wanted to share some thoughts that I had while I was reading this. So on page 2 of the methodology, the report assumes that the water quality delivered to the growers is suitable for irrigation of existing crops. And the report later states on page 10 that the project water supply benefit is estimated at 530 acre-feet a year during drought and 615-plus acre-feet a year during normal to wet years. So it also states that these are the maximum anticipated benefits and would require a high level of grower participation in the reclaimed water program. So I understand that Morro Creek Ranch has expressed an interest in purchasing 340 acre-feet. These were some concerns that went through my head when I was reading this.
One thing I'd like to address up front, the water quality requirements.
Mm-hmm.
Those are water quality levels that can be achieved at a wastewater treatment plant, particularly if you incorporate some level of desalination. The important thing to point out, though, is at the California Men's Colony site, in order to meet their current permit, the city could not discharge state water now to Joro Creek and meet their effluent permit because they have a receiving water TDS level of 500, mm-hmm. which is half this level. So you've got desalination, most likely, based on that permit. And Regional Board, we heard in a conference call Monday that Regional Board is not likely to relax that requirement at CMC because that would be considered backsliding from the current permit. So you will have a salt limit, most likely either location. And that's something that was also addressed in the Larry Walker report. And that's where it's, you know, there are a lot of reports and studies that kind of all need to come together because there are different elements of this that complicate other elements, that's what we put it.
I think if we look back to the Larry Walker study, they said exactly the same thing, that both nutrient and salt will be an issue for discharges to those creeks, and they'll have to be addressed. Probably, this is just a guess, a wild guess, that the permit limits aren't ever going to relax again to what they were 10 years ago, 15 years ago. So we're never going to have lower permit limits. It seems like permit limits tend to ratchet up as new technology appears so that we have the ability to treat for those contaminant levels.
If I may here real quick, is there going to be a cost estimate to the agricultural people that how much it's going to cost for the water yet? Do we know? Because we've been figuring out how much it costs to pump.
Yeah.
We got that. And as people I've talked to over the past week have said they don't want to pay any more than what it costs us to pump it out of the ground, that what it's going to cost to get delivered. So,
John. Yeah, well, I think the realistic answer is by the time the 12th comes around, we won't know the answer because that won't have been figured out. But what will be useful to us, if you have that information about what the farmers are paying, that would be useful because that's the beginning point of trying to figure out the answer there and how that works. So
I'm waiting for some more to come back
okay.
to me.
Okay.
That'd be great.
And as far as treatment goes, to address Jenny's concerns, there's always the possibility to do side stream treatments where if you know half of the flows are going to avocado farmers, you might do that higher level of treatment. Yep. But if it's going to go to the ocean, there's no reason to treat it to that higher level just to put it in the ocean at that point. So you can reduce costs that way and not have a plant that's treating all the water to that higher level.
That's correct. And that would be the assumption both places, that you're not going to – you wouldn't anticipate providing reverse osmosis to 100% of that flow all year at either location.
Yep. Richard?
Regarding the water situation, you go up 41 and you see all those avocados that were cut down, and I think that the getting water to the farmers there, I think that there's going to be plenty of people wanting that, and if I'm not mistaken, they're buying it from one of the water purveyors from Cayucas under LAFCO's jurisdiction just to subsidize. But you know, this is something that I have been mentioning for several years, and that being two things. You make an assumption with this Cayucas not, with their Morro Basin, Cayucas not being interested. Cayucas Sanitary District is a special district under LAFCO's jurisdiction with the county, okay? So they're not going to be, it makes complete sense them not being interested in the Morro Basin study because they're a narrowly focused special district. All they do is, take sewage and pump it to Morro Bay. Now, they, when you make an assumption that with the, as far as the flow rates, You know, Bruce, you know that, you know, several years ago I made a flow study that shows that our flows just from Cayucas in the standard of deviations are, you know, because of we're a tourist entity, we're not going to be able to just blend and dump into the ocean with a 301H waiver. That's what we've been doing for a while. That's going to come H2S issues that they have on Main Street. These are opportunities that kind of give us a little bit more benefit as citizens of Morro Bay. So, and then I believe that as far as addressing, one of the things is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Rob, but we use one of our city municipal wells is pumped at the Narrows, the well 3, I think. Isn't that connected to our desal plant at this time to treat nitrates?
Actually, all those wells can be shunted over to the desal plant. We have the plumbing in place to feed that desal plant from all of our Morro Valley wells. And there are two wells that aren't actually owned by the cities, wells number 1 and 2 on PG&E/Dynergy property. Mm-hmm. And you talked about the permitting before. That was Dynergy trying to get a coastal development permit to drill that well.
Okay.
And Coastal appealed that coastal development permit. So okay. We're talking with them now about the status of those wells.
Okay.
And that, but that was a permit for well development or enhancement, right?
Yeah, but
a replacement well.
Right. Where in Chorro Valley, which Richard talked about earlier,
we're just using them more.
Not enhancing the
well.
Yeah,
it would still need a CDB because you increase the use, that would trigger it. So you would still need a CDP.
It's something that needs to be investigated because we have an existing right to use that. So it's important to understand if we need a CDP or not.
I think it depends on your interpretation of intensification of use under the Coastal Act. We can get all the planners in a room to debate that. What is intensification of use?
Yeah, so, I'm looking at if we're, as a citizen of Morro Bay and concern, we take, you know, we understand that we have an opportunity to have, you know, to fix our aquifer and have a sustainable, okay? And, you know, the minute we start going outside our sphere of influence, then it's an issue. And that's all I have to say.
Okay. Thank you. Howry? Nothing. And Bill?
I've just got a couple things here. I just want to reconfirm that if we use reclaimed water in the Morro Valley, we're going to have to probably pump the great majority of it to the user. It's uphill, right? It's uphill.
Some of it is uphill, some of it is downhill.
That's what I'm trying to get a handle on here. In the Morro Valley shows significant use for reclaimed water, but I think most of it's uphill, isn't it?
And the question is going to be, do you have one transmission main with a bunch of turnouts, and then folks are responsible for getting it from the turnout to wherever elevation they're going to use it? Or do you build a system that gets it to that elevation?
Right.
And those are the things that will be addressed in the kind of the master reclamation planning phase, because that sort of thing requires a lot of discussion, a lot of cooperation with the growers.
But where is that point in our sequence of scheduled activities ahead of us? Is that way out in the future, or is that pretty close?
Not way out, but it's after site selection.
Yeah.
Oh, it's after site selection.
Yes.
Okay. This is my second question. I'm having a lot of trouble differentiating between the different levels of cleaned up wastewater. And we got reclaimed wastewater for ag. We have discharged wastewater into Chorro Creek. We have discharged wastewater into the ocean. We have wastewater for recharging our water table. And I'm pretty sure there is a different level of requirements by all these agencies for each one of these wastewater uses. Is there some way we can put a cost element against each one of these different uses of our wastewater?
The one good source of information I'd point you to is there are a couple of really good summary tables in the Larry Walker Associates study where they compared the permit, the likely permit that the city would have at for discharge to Choro Creek, discharge to Morrow Creek, percolation pond disposal, which is essentially groundwater recharge, indirect ground, which, you know, the county currently, I think Dairy Creek Golf Course has a demand of around 250 acre feet per year, for example, that they could use. And there might be some other users up there. So there are those users, but the more stringent requirement is going to be your wet weather use or your wet weather demand, and also the fact that creek discharge, if the city's going to get that direct water supply benefit. And that creek discharge is going to have more stringent requirements than any of these other uses we've talked about.
Okay. Did I hear after site selection there'll be an evaluation of storage locations? Is that what I heard?
Yeah, as part of the more detailed reclaim water study.
And that'll be after council site made select. A decision,
yeah.
Then as well? Okay, because that concerns me a little bit, because I think one of our tasks here is doing some sort of a fatal flaw analysis for the city council. And if we're recommending a site and then part of it is contingent on water storage and there is no available water storage, or water storage is cost prohibitive, you know, we've advised in an inappropriate manner, in my opinion. So I know we've discussed the plant should be reclamation ready, and I'm 100% behind reclamation ready, where the plant is treating the tertiary levels, and then we can add on as appropriate as demand grows for recycled water, so we're not doing it all at once. But if we're not able to find the storage site or it's going to be cost prohibitive, that defeats some of the purposes. And I also believe we probably need to be prepared that the Coastal Commission may not believe reclamation ready is appropriate. It may require a small percentage of the water to go directly to ag users, and so a storage facility nearby should probably be identified sooner than later. And I hope we have part of our tour today, we do go out there and get a good lay of the land so we can have that further understanding. My last question is, this report from Cleith was largely or entirely about direct offset of pumping from agricultural uses and how that would benefit the Morro Bay well fields. What was he tasked with looking at, or his staff looked at, real traditional ag exchange, where the city then retains rights? If a farmer starts using recycled water, the city retains rights to their ag pump, ag wells for municipal purposes?
I think that was his assumption, is that all of that water does become available. Mm-hmm. So it's like an ag, but that's a contractual issue. That's a contract negotiation versus a hydrogeologic.
My understanding is, and correct me if I'm wrong, it becomes available through downstream movement to the existing wells, and it's pumped out of the existing wells. Is that correct?
That's exactly what we're proposing here.
Right. So what I'm asking is, has any discussion been around, say, an avocado grower starts using recycled water, the city retains rights to his well field and has the benefit of less pumping in the entire basin, so the well fields are more productive for Morro Bay, and they can pump to their permit capacity, but then also enjoys the benefit of pumping from an ag well that is now not being utilized.
Okay,
because
I get
of,
no, that wasn't pump. Part of the study. But I believe that's probably going to be more of a contractual discussion rather than a hydrogeological discussion.
Is it fair to assume that would enhance the city's water supply if that option was available?
If we had more water rights, yes. It's fair to say that if we have more water rights, it will enhance the city's water supply.
Talking with the farmers, that's one of the things they're saying is they will not give up their ag wells just to use recycled. Okay. That's one of the things they said no. So.
But one of the things I wanted to point out too, to respond to your comment on the reservoirs, I mean, I think it's a valid comment. The issue you're going to face in the Troy location is the same. Is you're still going to, if you have recycled water users there, and you're trying to satisfy some of that demand with some of that additional water, you might face the same issue with the reservoir there that you face it in more. It could be.
Well, my understanding of the Chora Valley report is there's no storage. It's creek conveyance to the Chora well field, so there's no need for storage ever.
Right.
And if a user wanted storage, either the golf course or Cuesta College would be the two most likely suspects. They would probably develop storage for their purposes.
Yep, that's correct. And this was just to respond to a question earlier on the reclaimed water. There was some discussion about recycled water opportunities in that Chora area, but that's something you'd face.
Moro Valley has no creek discharge and conveyance to downstream users.
I believe also from recall that it's Water Code Section 7 or 1210 that says the reclaimer of the water owns the rights to those water, unless that's changed. It's always been my understanding.
I think to the point of discharge. So once it's discharged to a water course, it becomes fuzzier based on.
But then again, if somebody appropriates that, they'd still have to go to the state board for a decision. Okay.
Okay.
Just one other comment. In the mix, what I know I've asked the Mike and John to look at also is the crop value in the two basins and look at, you know, what the crop value in the Moro Basin versus the Chora Basin, because that's one of the things we're missing in this cost mix is what are the crops that we're trying to maintain.
Okay, do we have any public comment on this item? Seeing none, this is also just a receive and provide comment, so there's no action needed here. That moves us on to committee member closing comments, which we're not closing because we're going on a field trip, but before we take our field trip, are there any additional comments from any committee members?
Are we coming back here to close after the field trip? Or
no. We'll adjourn from out there.
I have one. This Assembly Bill number 52, we got this in an email today.
Yeah, that's...
Why?
Just for information.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Valerie presented it to me, and I wasn't sure if she meant the whole group to be... It's about archaeological resources and how we're going to have to deal with those archaeological resources with any project.
I just have a comment. I just like to have this handout in the record.
Yes, it is.
All right. Thank you.
My question is the same one at the end of the meeting 2 weeks ago. Has anyone in the city of Morro Bay in an official capacity contacted anyone at CMC concerning their sewer or any plans or and any coordination efforts by Morro Bay and CMC for a joint facility?
Yes.
Okay. Any other comments, questions? Then we are going to go to a site tour, which is at the potential future WRF Rancho Colina site, located 1 mile easterly of the existing city limits at 1045 Atascadero Road. We did make a change, so we're not going to reconvene back here. We're going to adjourn our meeting at the site. So if any members of
so we'll take a recess at this point and then reconvene out at the site, and we'll report out at the next meeting what any impressions that we have of that site, if any.
Okay. Let's go.
So the site, are we talking about at the Rancho Colina trailer park? We're pulling in park there?
No.
Or are we going to the next driveway up?
Next driveway
up there, okay.
Two palm trees, white fence.
for that small existing treatment facility.
I know that.
Okay. Let's go.
We have...